Mr. Hayward, Reel 13. Now, we were talking about an incident when you'd rather frozen in action when ordered to get out of the tank under heavy shrapnel fire, to explain the background, on the advance to Shur on the 26th of June 1944, part of Operation Epsom. Now, I know, did any of your crew, did Penman, did the officer, Dark, did they ever say anything to you later on about this? Or criticise you, or in any way get at you about it, in your view?
No, I think it would stick in my mind. It would worry me if something had been said, you know, something like you're a coward, or, you know, you're frantic, or something like that. That would really stick in my mind, but nothing like that was ever said to me. It may be that the crew sympathised with me at the time, because they would be hearing all this noise of shrapnel. It may be also that at the end of the day, everybody was so tired that all they wanted to do was grab a bit of food, fill up the tank with petrol and water, and get down to a snatch a bit of sleep.
Now, I know you think that there's a general point about experience. Your lack of experience as a trained and battle-hardened member of a tank crew or co-driver. Could you just give us your thoughts on this? Because I know you've thought quite deeply about why you didn't perform very well. You don't feel you've performed well, I know.
No.
What do you think is the background to that?
Well, I think, firstly, I didn't really understand the radio jargon, all these special terms they use on the radio. I hadn't been trained in that. I had to get used to that. So that was a mystery to me, so I didn't really know what was going on.
So there was an element of confusion?
Yes.
In your mind?
Yes, there was that about it. There was a feeling that, because of my lack of knowledge, I might let down the crew. But not seriously, so I was determined to do what I could, you know, to plug the gap in my head, pick it up as quickly as possible. Probably a little bit uneasy about letting the crew down in an emergency. One of the aspects, of course, that they'd only discovered while we were at Cully was the fact that I'd never driven a Sherman tank, although I was supposed to be a co-driver. That was one of the things the officer discovered, and he put me through a little driving lesson at Cully, just to see what I could do. So that was another point where perhaps, because I hadn't driven a Sherman, I wouldn't have been as efficient as Penman the driver.
And so you weren't confident?
No, I didn't be as confident as Penman. Although being young, I was at that frame of mind where I'd jump into any vehicle and have a go, like the German half-track I drove later on. In battle on that, I would have felt much more confident had I been trained as a Sherman driver.
And what about battle experience? Do you think that was valuable? Because I know you got less nervous from your account.
Yes. Yes, it was something that you acquired. You acquired this knowledge. But I have a feeling that, going back to the shrapnel incident, I have a feeling that even in their basic training back in England, I don't think that could have cropped up in any lessons about battle tactics. I think even then, at that stage, any crew would have been horrified at the idea of being ordered to get out under shrapnel fire if it wasn't absolutely necessary, if it wasn't vital. And at that time, I don't think the fire on the back of the tank was serious enough to warrant getting out under shrapnel fire.
So although we've mentioned that a fire on the back could cause a fire inside the Sherman, if bad enough, this was smouldering.
Just smouldering, yes. And that was the officer's own words, that he detected something smouldering on the back of the tank and would try to get out and stamp it out.
So he was perhaps slightly overreacting as well?
Yes, it could be. Because in his initial training, I don't think he would have been expected to order somebody to get out into a hail of shrapnel
Now, so what happened next? You'd had this rather shaking experience, and then Penman had got out and done it, and in a lull in the shrapnel fire. Did it recommence? Or what happened? Because you didn't take part in the actual attack on Cully, did you?
On Sher.
Sher, sorry, wrong place, sorry.
No, we were pulled back in reserve for that day's fighting. But we did linger on in that position for a while after the shrapnel, and there was still a lot of shelling going on. Some of it was not landing near us, some of it was landing elsewhere, but we were still up there for probably the best part of the day. It was probably late afternoon when the change in the situation took place where we were pulled back.
And that was the end of the battle for you?
Yes, we would be pulled back, but we would still be hovering near the battle zone.
Were you covering the flanks at all?
I suspect we would be. Yes.
But you wouldn't know?
I wouldn't know offhand, no. I suspect we were given some job like that to do.
Now, you seem to have pulled back into Lager that night before going into action again on the 27th of June. What was a Lager? Could you explain what it meant by that in one of these in-contact situations?
Yes, we had obviously practiced going into a Lager in England, but I don't remember much about it because I was in the workshops at the time in England. But here, going into Lager, it was quite interesting to me because they virtually pulled back out of the battle area a short distance and left the infantry to guard what we'd won during the daytime. And the tanks chose a suitable field and formed up in columns, one tank behind the other, not too close, but in lines. And soft vehicles, if they were any about, the soft vehicles were the wheeled vehicles, not the unarmed vehicles. Soft vehicles would be parked in between these lines of tanks. And the idea was that the tanks could guard that field because they could point their guns all around the perimeter and protect that field if necessary, although it would be dark, summertime darkness. And you had that uneasy feeling that you were still quite close to the enemy and you wouldn't know what was going on in the middle of the night. There were probably patrols out, ours and theirs, but fortunately we didn't have any bother. It was an interesting situation in that had the Germans got a very strong air force, they could have dropped a few flares and made mincemeat of us in that type of formation. And it was a great risk to take. And but basically in Lager, the first things we had to do, even though we were tired out, we had to see that the tanks were filled up with petrol and anything else that was needed, ammunition to top up the rounds that had been expended during the day. Other things, we might have to get further supplies of food, water, of course, there would be a water trailer available for us to fill up our water bottles and larger containers for use during the day. The water trailer, by the way, is towed by one of the lorries, and it had a row of taps along the back so that several soldiers could use the water truck at the same time. And then you tried to get whatever sleep you could get by putting your ground sheets out on the ground or on a tarpaulin. And if you felt a bit uneasy, you could crawl under the tank, sort of worm your way under the tank with your blankets rolled around you. This sometimes happened if there was any near gunfire and we thought the old shell might drop our way. But another method was, if you felt really uneasy, was to just get back into your tank and sit there.
Were you aware, I mean, there's quite a risk on soft ground of tanks sinking in overnight and squashing people underneath it. Were you aware of that?
Yes, I've heard several chaps mention the dangers of that and how some of them had scrambled clear in the nick of time. But at that time of year in Normandy, even though we did have rain, the ground was not particularly soft in that area. It was fairly compacted, summertime. Farming activities hadn't really churned up the ground.
So it was something you were aware of, but you could see it was reasonably safe. What did you actually do? Do you remember?
Yes, I think having been in the tank all day long, I didn't particularly want to snooze in the tank overnight, and so if as it was at the time, was quiet in these lagers, I just rolled on the tarpaulin with the rest of them, put the blankets down and slept like that. Sometimes actually in the open, not under the tank at all.
Now, what about next day, the 27th?
Well, being summertime, daylight came very, very early the next day, and we had to be ready to go off at first light, as they called it. And so we got very little sleep in the end. But being young, we could probably take it. And then, of course, the excitement. There was naturally a lot of excitement of this battle area. And that, I suppose, in a way, bolsters up and not causes any problems, so it's probably going to sleep the next day. So, the next day, we move off, and as mentioned about the first day, we'd still be on a flank duty operation, but I remember particularly that it was a long day. We spent almost the whole of the day on the hilltop overlooking the valley. And this could possibly be the valley where a little river ran down, which was later crossed during this show campaign. But during that day, our tank, which had a 75mm gun in charge of Lieutenant Dark, we fired a few high explosive shells down into that valley because the officer had seen movement down there. And it wasn't terribly far away because although he had field glasses, I could see, even with my periscope enough, of what was going on there. Basically, it was a wooded valley, and so whatever was going on that was visible to the officer was in the woods. And this caused him to send a few high explosive rounds down in that area. And within a short time, I saw through my periscope a German Red Cross ambulance appear in a little lane at the bottom. And I remember the officer debating whether to shoot it up. And I was a bit horrified at that. But anyway, he decided not to. And off it went, carrying presumably wounded from out of the woods. And so we didn't seem to have any more trouble from that area, although nothing had been fired at us from those woods. It was just the officer had seen something going on down there. We naturally could hear gunfire all over the place, probably from other tanks and Germans firing back. But my impression of that day was mainly of the odd dead cattle lying around in the fields, very swollen and bloated, but nothing could be done about it at that time. We occasionally, if it went quiet, we occasionally got out of the tank to relieve ourselves. which made a change from using the bags they supplied us with, which you used inside the tank and then flung them out. I suppose there was always a danger when you got out of the tank, not just from shelling, but there was always a danger that there might have been a stray mine lying around somewhere. But we didn't think about that sort of thing. We were warned mainly about booby traps, that if we came across any, say, German dugouts, or abandoned equipment, or even a ruined building, we were told to be very careful not to overreach ourselves and get too inquisitive. So after that second day, we were...
Was it this second day or the third day when you were in this situation looking down a slope and seeing loads of tanks waltzing about?
No, that was later on.
Right, okay.
Yes, that was later on.
So the second day you occupied this hill, and with the exception of opening fire, that's on the wooded area, that's about all you remember from that day?
That's about all I remember.
You didn't come under fire or air attack or anything?
No, we hardly moved. We would be, I think what they call the expression was hull down on this hilltop, and we had a little bit of cover around us. I seem to remember a bit of a wood on the right of us.
Can you just explain for them what hull down means?
Yes, hull down means that the main part of the tank is concealed by the slope of the hill. And so you'd be in that sort of position where possibly only the turret was visible over the crest of the hill with its main gun and coaxial machine gun with it. So in my position as co-driver, I would probably have difficulty in shooting at anything in that position. Probably my periscope was high enough to see over the crest of the hill, as it obviously was, otherwise I wouldn't have been able to see anything. But most of the tank would be sort of leaning sort of backwards down the slope and come up in that sort of hull down position.
Right, so what happened that night? Did you pull back into lager again?
Yes, I think we used lagers every night. I don't think we actually stayed in a daytime position overnight in that particular battle. I think we always went back to lager and left it to the infantry to hold the line.
Do you know why that was?
It was mainly because it was difficult to protect a lone tank at night. You'd either have to get out of the tank and guard it as you would in England, as if it was in a vehicle park, or you'd have to delegate the tank crew to keep watch from inside the tank with their heads out at the top. And being pitch dark and near trees and bushes, it would be very easy for a German patrol to creep up on you and bring a hand grenade or something. So it wasn't a very comfortable position to be in, with the tanks that were scattered around the countryside. It was much better for them to get together at night, even if there was the danger of.
So, nothing happened again that night, and then what happened on the 28th we've reached now?
Yes, well, I called it the third day.
Yeah.
This was possibly the day when in the morning, on the approach to the battle area from Lager, our tank ran over a mine along this track. We were following the leader along this track, and our particular tank ran over this mine. And the escape hatch, which was in the floor behind me, got blown off. The officer obviously radioed back for orders in this situation.
What was it like, though, the actual moment of the mine going off? How did it feel inside the tank?
Well, to my memory, I don't think it could have been a very big mine, because I don't remember any sensation of the whole tank rocking or anything like that. It was just a loud explosion, and fortunately the tank's arm shielded us from the blast. But strangely, this escape hatch, which from my memory was secured by means of spring-loaded catches, the explosion must have caught these catches in a funny sort of way, and or even distorted the metal under the tank to the extent that the hatch just dropped down. And if it had been open then, of course, I would probably have got the full force where I was sitting. But I don't remember even being shocked, you know. It was something that you sort of half expected to happen at some stage. Unfortunately, it wasn't a big mine. Might have been one of these anti-personnel mines, possibly, I don't know, you know what type. Certainly designed to blow up a vehicle or a soft vehicle.
So what you said, your officer radioed?
He radioed, and we were ordered to go back to the workshop area and get the tank repaired. And we didn't know, we naturally thought that they would do something pretty quickly, and we'd go up again and follow the others, but we were out of action that day. So we didn't see what went on that particular day. But the regiment must have achieved some advance that day, because when, I don't remember when we rejoined the others, my guess is that when they all came back to Lager that night, we probably joined them there. Because the next day, we actually went much further. And this is where, this would be what I call the fourth day, we went up onto Hill 112. And although at the time we didn't notice Hill 112, it was just another hill in Normandy to us. And my guess is that the previous day, when we were advancing and had this escape hatch blown off, we were probably using the approach road to that area, but we never got there that day. So on the fourth day then, we were going up where others had been, and it wasn't long after we positioned ourselves on this hilltop that firing began from the enemy. And our tanks, there were quite a lot of them up on that hillside. I would think there was probably a whole squadron there on that hillside, which must have been ours, of course, B squadron. And suddenly, looking through my periscope, I could see these other tanks of ours, including ours, all waltzing around in strange directions, twisting and turning, and there was this firing going on. Some of our tanks were firing back, although to me, down in the hull, the bottom, I couldn't see what they were firing at. I couldn't see anything. I couldn't see beyond the hilltop because we were down below the crest of the hill. There were straggling hedges on each side. It was quite a large open field. And then suddenly, I must have had the periscope in the right position when it happened, because I saw a shower of sparks fly off as something hit the left-hand corner of our tank. That was the driver's side. Something had hit the front corner of the tank and sent off this shower of sparks. And my guess was that it was an armour piercing shot which had got deflected but had gouged into the metal. We were still waltzing around.
Were you firing yourself, your tank?
Our tank was firing as well, just with the big gun. But to me, it all seemed rather crazy because it looked highly dangerous because you never knew when one of our tanks was going to cross your line of fire. They were waltzing around so madly. It seemed to be a crazy sort of battle from our point of view. But obviously...
Did you see any German tanks?
No, I didn't see any. Others described having seen them. What happened in our case, this battle went on for quite a while. And at one point, the officer asked me to fire into a hedge. And we were at that time facing this hedge at some distance away, probably 100 yards or so. And this particular hedge looked to me like the sort of hedge that grows on the top of a sunken lane. And you get them on each side, of course, but you couldn't see the further hedge beyond it. And the officer said, fire your machine gun and do a sort of raking sort of fire along the base of this hedge, which I did, and the trace of bullets guided me to get the gun lined up properly, and I continued to do this raking from side to side along this hedge for some time, and he told me to stop firing after a while. He said, jolly good shooting, hey Lord, or whatever they called me then, but I hadn't seen a thing. I hadn't seen any movement. I never knew whether I'd actually, you know, killed anybody or wounded anybody or succeeded. But the officer seemed to think, obviously, that it had done the trick. And my guess is that part of this enemy action was probably not only tanks, but infantry coming up this sunken lane.
German infantry. Were you aware of British infantry being around? Because there's some reference in the war diary of wild shooting, you know, from infantry. Did you know where the British infantry were?
The officer would have an idea. We certainly didn't as crew members. In a situation like that, in the daytime, at that particular time of the Normandy campaign, I would say the infantry were not around. They would be well back until we finished the tanks. We did, later in the war over there, we did use infantry. They sort of used our tanks to advance and then deploy. This was particularly useful in tidying up villages where the tanks weren't sure that there weren't some Germans left hiding inside these ruined buildings, and the infantry were often used in that capacity to come up with the tanks and clean up these places so that our tanks could safely advance further. But certainly in that stage of the Normandy campaign, it would be most unlikely for the infantry, say, to be in that sunken lane, our infantry.
Oh, no, I didn't, yeah, no, I just meant whether they were around you, whether you were aware of their positions, but, yeah.
No, it would be such a hot spot, you know, from the shelling point of view, that anybody outside of the tank then would be very vulnerable indeed.
Now, well, at one point you drove your tank. Is that this day or another day?
When I think back to that occasion when I actually drove the Sherman, that must have been before we went into battle.
Right, we'll come back to that then. I'll pick that up then. So you were in this confused situation. You just fired your Browning. You reckon this is a 29th, I think we decided. What happened next?
Well, to my memory, the fighting seemed to die away then. That must have been the critical point of the campaign, perhaps the nearest the Germans got to us on that hillside. And the battle seemed to die away soon after. Some of our tanks were obviously still firing at distant German tanks. But It died away, and we just remained in that position until the usual dusk, when the infantry were on the move and coming up to take over the position again.